every Tuesday, we hop on the 7 line, cruise on down to the Showers building. Into the Fernandez Plaza we go. Into Showers we arrive. But today, we will stop at the Director of Economic and Sustainable Development. That's Alex Crowley's office. Alex, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
We always appreciate your time here on, when we get a chance for you to pinch hit for us, so that's exciting. How's your summer been going? It's not even summer yet. Summer's next Wednesday, but we run on a weird schedule here, don't we?
It's been a great summer. I mean, the weather was a little funky, but I don't know if you were out and about on Saturday
yes.
in Bloomington. What a great time downtown. That was such a fabulous Grand Falloon event. In fact, the whole week was, but the culmination of it with everything happening on Kirkwood plus that terrific concert. I have to say, I stood there. I was like, this is one of the greatest days I've ever seen in Bloomington.
Well, and the weather was perfect. That's what my friends at the Handmade Market told me as well. They said, this time of year is not it's hit or miss, but when you get the weather like this, nobody has an excuse not to go out and just see what the heck is going on. I was out with my Grand Falloonatics. We had fun. We were down there from about 2:30 to 8:30, so we put in some good hours, some good steps, and everything else. How important is that? How important is the partnership with the city and Indiana University to do more things like Grand Falloon? I know Grand Falloon hasn't been going on for 40 years. That hasn't been the case. I know it started right before the pandemic, but having the town and gown meshed together, that has to be good for business, doesn't it?
It is. It is. In fact, that's kind of the hidden story there that I'm glad you asked that question, because, you know, when you go to something like that, if you're just kind of out there, you may not realize how much coordination it takes. And, you know, there was such a big effort by IU Arts and Humanities to pull the whole thing together, obviously get the names of the performers and all of that, and all of the coordination work that they did. But it was also very closely aligned with a variety of different departments of the city. And that kind of event, which seems effortless at the time, is not. And it is a great collaboration, and we really look forward to working with them on stuff like that long into the future. I think it really takes advantage of all of the strengths of all of the different parties involved.
Do you take that idea to them? Do you guys meet quarterly to bounce these things off of each other? How does this relationship, A, get started, and B, continue to be wide open for all these great ideas?
Well, you know, something like that takes 9 months of planning, right? So, I mean, it starts early and it takes a lot of coordination. We have regular contact with a variety of different parties over at IU and vice versa. There's at all levels of the city. And so there's constant communication going back and forth. They want to try something, we, help them do it. We want to try something using their talent. And, for example, one of the things we're throwing around is something we tested during the pandemic, during the street closures for outdoor dining, which was Busk at Dusk, which is where you have Jacob School musicians out in the streets playing. That kind of idea, maybe comes from our side, but they play and they leverage their assets to be able to help us. And so it's a constant back and forth. But when it works, it really works.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, because you have the greater resources, whether it's city employees to help close off streets or fire or first response, whatever it can be. The university is kind of, it's almost like they have Dunmeadow, and so it makes sense. They've got the perhaps, I don't want to say the talent, that sounds wrong, but there are things that you can put together, but it's just hard to cram it onto campus.
Yeah, and take Grand Falloon, for example. So last year when we were planning the first, the first Kirkwood one, one of the considerations they had was, that if you do it on Dunmeadow, that's huge, right? It's a huge footprint. And so if you have 1,000 people there, it looks and feels very differently than if you have 1,000 people on Kirkwood, right? And so there's value sometimes in then coming off campus and putting stuff out in the main part of the city, as opposed to retaining something like that on campus. It just creates an energy level and an opportunity for people, because I think sometimes people in the community feel like if it's happening on campus, somehow it's
not
a part
accessible
of it. To them.
That's exactly, you are 100% right. I've lived here since 1993, and if I had a dollar for every time someone said, I saw that going on, but I thought it was for the students, or just for the students, you're exactly right. And that, I think that's why this partnership is important, because when you put it on the city streets, no one cares who gets credit for it, right? You just want to bring 10, 15,000 people together. Did you get a final number from that?
I have not seen a final number, but I know that it was pretty crowded. I was out there myself.
It was, and it was crowded from the sample gates all the way around the square. And if you were downtown getting something to eat, like we were at 5:30, and there's one table available, that has to be a great way to do it. Now, this isn't going to replace Taste of Bloomington, but we know that ship has sailed. I'm excited because I think we'll do more things instead of just waiting around for Taste of Bloomington. Am I on the right path here?
Yeah, I think what this does is the nice thing about it is when we, you know, last year was a bit of a heavy lift because it was the first time we were trying it on Kirkwood. Once you've done it once, you do tweak it from year to year, but you kind of have a playbook, right? And it's not limited to Grand Falloon. Now we have a playbook that says, look, if anybody wants to do something that, you know, that takes a kind of coordination, we know the players, we know what's needed, we know the timing and all of that stuff, it becomes a lot easier to pull something like that off. And I agree with you that, you know, this was before my time, but you know, I gather years ago there was a lot of this kind of stuff that was happening, kind of big festivals, and it just energizes a community. Now, it's obviously some people don't like the fact that, you know, the streets closed off and all that, but all in, and in fact, you know, when we think about something like the Switchyard music series that's going to start on Thursday, it's the same kind of thing. You got to kind of do the heavy lift at first. But once you figure out how to do it and you start to build momentum around it, it is something that you can leverage for any number of different uses.
And the other thing about it, we have this, and I don't know if it's prevalent, but there is still some of the belief around here, and I try to talk people out of this all the time. You're not going to park right in front of your favorite restaurant going in to eat. You don't do that in Chicago. You don't do it in San Francisco. You don't do it in New York City. So I don't understand, just because we're not a major, we don't have 10 million people here, but so what? You have to park three blocks away and walk when it's 80 degrees to enjoy 10 or 15,000 people. You do that at the football stadium. You don't park right in front of your gate and walk in and go sit at your tickets, unless you're in the varsity club for 500 years. I just, you know, all the streets are closed, yeah, and then it's raining, and there's people everywhere, and it's noisy. Well, come on. This is what Bloomington's always been this way.
But we have this expectation, and that's fine, right? People do want to have as much convenience as they can. But there are times when I think it is important to understand the value of the overall community of a temporary closure, what that does for putting Bloomington on the map, for bringing people into town, for helping to stimulate the tourism industry that's here, and really just the whole economic mix of stuff that happens. If you like your restaurant in the middle of the summer, when there is no student population that is keeping it up, right, and you want it to be there and you want that restaurant to be vibrant and successful, sometimes you need to have some moments when you may not have the ultimate convenience, because all in, that helps the community overall to be vibrant.
Sure does. Alex Crawley is our guest. He's the Director of Economic and Sustainable Development here in Bloomington. And, well, something else that would help that out. You can't have a festival every week. There's too many moving parts. There's too many things you have to do. There's too many this, that, and everything else. But if you do put together a convention center and you can run people in and out, well, it won't feel like a festival, but those restaurants fill up. The shops get people poking around in them. The hotels fill up. All the other things that go along with having just people around, well, we know it's important to get the convention center going. We've been trying to get it going for some time. Do you have a seat at that table? Where are we with the memorandum that came out a couple weeks ago? Can you give us any updates?
Well, let me start by just reiterating something you just said there. I think people generally may not understand the value of a convention center, right? So the value is not just having, you know, conventions. It's that those conventions happen almost by definition and are scheduled accordingly to be able to fill in and get hotel rooms used and get restaurants frequented during times that might not otherwise happen. So we have no problem filling hotel rooms for football weekends, for graduations, for Mother's Day, for all the kind of big events. It's the periods that exist between those spikes where you have this whiplash happening both for hospitality and for the tourism businesses like restaurants and all of that. That's what a convention center does. It fills in that gap, right? So The nice thing about Bloomington is people want to come to Bloomington. So we believe in the expansion, that there is a large untapped potential for bringing people to Bloomington, helping to keep those favorite restaurants going during the debtor periods, and all of that is critically important. So in terms of your specific question, we are trying to get this moving. Obviously, there's been some challenges, and part of it had to do with the pandemic. You know, there was a question, a legitimate question during the pandemic, like, is anybody ever going to travel again? but we're starting to see, and we've had a lot of, data that suggests that the hotel industry's fired back up, the restaurant industry's fired back up. So clearly, people want to avail themselves of the amenities that we have in Bloomington. The question is, how can we get a convention center built that is not just a solid convention center, but really a world-class convention center, and really, take Bloomington up to the next level when it comes to that sort of attraction.
Yeah, it'll be busy more times than not, because people love coming here, and hopefully we can make it vibrant all year around. And that will, again, if you're wanting to help business and in small business, which is the backbone of what we do around here, well, that works. It's great when Catalent hires 1,000 people. It's great when they build another factory, but there's different levels of greatness that we need. We need that balance, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what makes us, it's the cultural vibrancy that makes Bloomington so great for all of us living here, right? Much less the people coming in and experiencing it for a conference or for a weekend or whatever it is. But it is that mix of different kinds of businesses, opportunities, and that sort of thing that a convention center can help with.
Well, that's the other point. I've never been here. I'm not sure I want to go. I'm forced to go during my convention, and I'm like, wow, I'm coming back. I had no idea. It's hard to get somebody somewhere they haven't been or don't want to, perhaps think they want to go. It's all part of this big equation that Alex Crowley is trying to figure out. We have all kinds of things happening, and economic development is one of them, and sustainable development is another part. We know that the mayor and part of his mission is trying to get sustainable and affordable housing. Is that under that umbrella as well?
Yeah, look, so we have a couple of really interesting projects that are in the service of those goals. So sustainability, affordability, and great design, those are all the kind of the three legs of a stool that we really want to try to ensure happen in what we refer to as a built environment, so like the buildings that are going in and housing and all of that. If you think about Hopewell, which is the new neighborhood where the old hospital used to be, Hopewell provides an opportunity to the city to really hit home runs on all of those in an area that is right next to the downtown. And so we are hard at work right now trying to sort out how to ensure that all of those goals are met. We desperately need affordable housing, and affordability is, people think of the term affordable housing, sometimes they immediately go to, lowest income housing or Section 8 housing and that sort of thing. Affordability is that, but it's affordability across the entire spectrum. And one of the areas that we are particularly struggling with is affordability for people in that workforce kind of missing middle part of the income continuum. And so, places like Hopewell and some other major developments that are on the horizon, those can help people who are trying to stay here and work in a solid middle class job, find a place that they can afford to live in. And it's a pretty significant challenge, but we think we can do it.
How do you is this with incentives for developers? Because the city's not into building houses. The city's not into being a landlord. That's not what you guys excel at, right?
Right. So what we can do is a couple of things. Number one, yes, you can put together a package of incentives, and it doesn't necessarily mean just like a tax abatement or something like that, where someone where you're relieving them of some of their taxes. There are a number of tools that we can put in place to help that. So one might be, if we happen to own the land like we do in the Hopewell neighborhood, can we put a certain amount of land value on the table that therefore lowers the overall cost for a developer to come in and do the kind of thing that we want to see done there? So if one of the challenges we've got in Bloomington is that because student housing is so significant and prevalent and frankly lucrative, that what that does is it drives up land prices, because someone who owns a piece of land says, wait a minute, I can charge top dollar to a student housing developer, and so I'm going to hold out on that. And as a result, you get these kind of land values that are pretty elevated. But if you are the landowner, like, you know, in the case where in Hopewell, where the city is a landowner, we can say, you know what, we can artificially lower some of the cost to the developer if they agree to do what we would like them to do. In this case, let's say, for example, workforce housing. So you can take some of that cost off the table for them, allowing them to have a successful, financially feasible development that serves the needs of the community.
Now, the interesting other side of that coin, if I have this, I think I have this right, the time that the city does not have the leverage owning the property, how else do you encourage affordable housing? We know the county is having some, I don't want to say issues with that, but when I talk to Marty Hawk tomorrow, you know, they're not lining up development after development of affordable housing either.
Well, so there are a couple of ways you can do it. So one is certainly you've got tools like a tax abatement structure, where you're basically saying to the developer, if you do what we want you to do, we will relieve you of some portion of your real estate taxes, which is not insignificant for developers, right? That goes straight to the bottom line for them. So you've got a tool like that. We have this thing called the Housing Development Fund, which is a fund that is set aside to stimulate affordable housing. And then again, that can be any, you know, any definition other than market rate. So you've got that tool that's available. And then you've got, you know, other kind of harder to implement tools, but there are other kind of incentive structures that can be put in place so that a developer ultimately, they are solving for a pro forma. They are solving for a financial outcome. And so if you can get in and figure out what the pain point is in their financial model, and you can have some effect in relieving that pain point through, you know, incentives, then that allows for them to go forward with that development that you are looking for them to do.
Interesting. And it is interesting. And the other interesting part of this is we've learned that annexation and the ongoing issues with that hasn't helped any development of any kind.
Well, the problem with annexation, in part, is the lack of predictability, right? So you have certain areas that are kind of up in the air right now, and so people are kind of locked, you know, sort of frozen trying to figure out what's going to happen. We've run into some of that where people are saying, what's going to happen? And we're like, we don't know what's going to happen. We think we know, but we don't know for sure. And so until that plays itself out, it does limit the ability for us to yield stuff in those areas. The other thing that is difficult is that we, you know, without annexation, we have a land mass that is finite. And so, you know, I was talking about land values. When you have its basic supply demand, when you suddenly have less supply, the demand goes up. And there aren't a lot of developable areas in the city of Bloomington. And so, you know, for us to really see that that controlled growth that we believe is necessary for the success of Bloomington over the long term, one of the mechanisms is to add in certain areas that make all the sense of the world for them to be part of a city and have those be part, added in structurally into the footprint of the city of Bloomington.
Very interesting. Alex Crawley always is. He joins us this afternoon. He is the economic and sustainable, the director of the Department of Economic and Sustainable Development. Switchyard Park always has something going on, and it's almost noticeable when there's a day off. Well, today is not one of those days, as you have the Tuesday market down there. The big concert series is Thursday. Juneteenth is Saturday. Food Truck Friday, well, you can figure out what day that's on. It never ends down there. It's great.
It is so great. And I do want to highlight this Thursday concert because it is kind of a new thing. Visit Bloomington has been instrumental in getting that going. It's a free concert on Thursday starting the 15th, so in 2 days. At 6 p.m., and there is a great lineup. There are three scheduled right now, June 15th, July 20th, and August 24th. And what's particularly great about it is, as you know, if you've been to Switchyard, you've seen that big amphitheater and the lawn and stuff. I've actually been to a couple of concerts. They were smaller scale. But that place is primed for putting Bloomington on the map from a music perspective. And there are a lot of things to be worked out. So some of this is really kind of trying, you know, trial and error. But imagine a day when we are having great national and regional and local talent on that stage with thousands of people hanging out, having this kind of festival of music. What Visit Bloomington is starting to work on right now, and a bunch of people are involved, is to try to get that stage to its fullest potential, and I'm super excited for it.
Now, who do you partner with to make that happen? Because you have the physical properties there, but you're not in the concert promotion business either. I just find these dynamics interesting because it does take a village, doesn't it?
It does, and something like that, you've got the folks at Visit Bloomington, Mike McAfee and all of them, and they're instrumental in this. There are also a lot of other players, people who are interested in developing the music scene in Bloomington further. There's already a pretty solid music scene, but there are some people, who've been around for a long time who say, one of the problems with Bloomington from a music scene perspective is that while there are some good venues, there are a lot of good venues right now, there used to be a lot more, and things just naturally turn into other things. So we'll take, for example, what used to be Jake's, I think,
right.
Up on that used to be a music venue that had a lot of great bands come through, and now it's Switchyard Brewing, which is great, but it's not a music venue in the same way anymore. And so when you take something off the table like that, you do lose a little something. So what we have to do is take a look at the overall music infrastructure, if you will, around town, and Switchyard Park is one of those, and it was built for that. Now, how it evolves into the future remains to be seen, but at the very least, getting some momentum behind it, getting some activity, getting people to show up and appreciate what it's like to be at a concert there, which is fabulous, you got to start somewhere, and this is a really great start.
Well, and what's the price of the concert tickets?
Yeah, well, that's even better, right? Now,
they're
who knows
free.
If that's... if that may or may not be sustainable over the long term, so that you could have some free concerts, maybe also there's some paid concerts, who knows? But to pull that off is a whole other layer of complication that needs to be considered and thought through.
Got to walk before you can crawl. Got to crawl before you can run. Yeah, that makes sense. Acclaimed Chicago jazz artist Makaya McCraven with Funk Almighty is starting on Thursday night, the Switchyard Park Pavilion. Free concerts, free, begin at 6 p.m. Going to have any fun down there? You've probably had some food trucks, any cold beverages as well? I don't have that all in front of me. I apologize. It says here food trucks, beer garden, and more, so I'm hoping that's the case.
That, I think, believe will be the case. It should be a good time, and I would encourage people, if you want to if you want to have a decent seat, you might want to get there a little early. My understanding is that this might be pretty well attended.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you the forecast, and this will connect some more of the dots for you. It's going to be 87 on Thursday. It's going to feel a little bit like summertime, but the wind's going to be blowing, and the park's perfect. And go hang out in the splash pad if you get too hot, right? That's how this goes. Tell me about, we've got Thursday. We've got Tuesday Farmers Market tonight. Friday, I'll talk to Jordan Davis tomorrow about food truck Friday. Saturday is Juneteenth. How important is that for the city to have that celebration?
It's very important. It's such an important holiday. I think it was named a federal holiday a couple of years ago. The city quickly followed suit. It's on technically on the Monday, but it is the celebration of that is on Saturday.
I just wanted to make sure people were not confused or think, oh, there he goes again. He screwed up the date. No. It is Saturdays are way more fun than Monday, right?
That's right.
What else have I missed? We got everything covered, or we got to make sure that everybody knows tonight, because this is a big deal about development economically and sustainability as well. We're going to take a look at who's going to take a look at it. The committee is going to take a look at how we traffic in Bloomington. And what I mean by that is the College Walnut. Are we going to keep the College Walnut Corridor? It starts, and this is by definition, the bypass on the north side to Allen Street on the south side. That is being inspected and studied. Are we trying to make it safer? Are we trying to make it cleaner? Are we trying to make it happier? I know you're not, this is not an expert, you're not the expert in this field, but I know you're completely aware of what's going on.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting part of town. So yeah, if you track from the bypass,
that's
all
a long
the way, down,
way to go. Yeah, you
through,
go through all,
the, through
all the ecosystems.
Well, and there are different kind of areas, right? So in different, and so they're not trying to solve for one solution for the entire run from the bypass down to Allen. You sort of think of it in chunks. You've got the kind of northern part that heads into town. You've got town itself. The sort of downtown area, and then you've got the area south of town. I was just in a meeting about this earlier today, and it is you know, if you take a step back, we're all used to it, and so we've kind of you sometimes don't like to change things because you're used to the way it is. But really, when you look at it, it's a little insane that we have people driving 70 miles an hour into our downtown. And one of the issues is, you know, as you come south, for example, on College, and you come over that hill, right? You're kind of in one zone of high traffic. You pop on over the hill, and you're basically right in the downtown. And so, you know, the question is that set up ideally for pedestrian safety, for bicycle safety, and other modes, buses, that sort of thing? Is it right for us to have that kind of speed happening? Is it actually economically good for the commercial interests in town that people are zooming in and out?
I'd argue no. How can you see what's going on if you're just driving through? That's what a bypass is for, I thought.
Well, that's right. And they say that the slower a wallet goes by your storefront, the more they're going to spend there, right?
So I like that.
Yeah, so the question is how do you encourage safety while at the same time stimulating economic success of the entities that are on there? And then what, you know, other things, other considerations, like is it pedestrian friendly from a heat perspective? If you're walking on North College and you're walking down, you know, how does it feel? Does it feel like you're safe on the sidewalk? Does it feel like you're under trees? So there are all these questions, and it is largely a planning and transportation question, but it has repercussions for the entire community.
I think it's deeper, as you were painting the picture there, it has deeper layers than people just think. You're going to make it two-way traffic? Well, that could be part of it. There's many discussions going on. It's just not something that it's not going to be a flip of a switch and things are going to change, right? They want people to come out, give opinions on this. Do it tonight, 6 to 7:30. It's at City Hall, or you can stream it on Cats Television. The meeting tonight will focus on existing conditions, just as you were describing there, Alex. Thursday night's meeting will focus on a design concept ideas, same 6 p.m. to 7:30, same Cats Television, or you can attend in person.
Or Zoom.
There you go.
Yep.
You can find that Zoom link. Just get on Facebook and go to the city's webpage, and that should be up there ready to go. When is the timeline, if there is a timeline for this? How does this work?
That's a good question. That's where I'm a little bit less clear. But you know, my sense is that this is going to be a pretty deep dive into community feedback. And as you say, this is not going to be a knee-jerk reaction that'll immediately, you know, disrupt everything that exists right now. So, what I would encourage people to do is get in and voice your opinions and voice your interests in this early, as you say, either in person, Zoom, or even just watch it. You know, be engaged maybe that way, and know that it's out there. Know that the city is trying to really cultivate as much feedback into this process as possible, so that when a solution is put out there, that it's trying to get as many different viewpoints as possible.
That's what it should be doing, and that's local government at work for you and me and everybody else as well. So if this is near and dear to you, it's time to get involved to do so. And again, we just put up all the no turn on red signs. We're not changing that tomorrow. So you're going to have to just get in there and be patient with it. Hey, thanks. Great catching up with you. Anytime you want to come on. Let's go.
Mike, it's a pleasure joining, and I welcome the next time.